guys got to get real. When the real guys come, real fortune. We will. Great. Market game changer. Got to get real. These are the kind of guys I need to have in the locker room. The championship type guys. Third guys, you just got to recognize I got to pay the money. I got to keep it. Everybody has an opinion.
They came with so much bravado and so much swagger.
We'll make it. We are not going to make it. Sometimes you got to create space where there's no space.
I can't argue with LeBron to do it.
You don't have a game of problems with execution, right?
He burned a lot of bridges. He's going to be hated in Chicago. He's going to be hated in Cleveland. He's going to be hated in New York. And that's what I'm excited to see.
Nah, I blame it on Nintendo. I blame it on the fact that they never played against a team that's going to be as dominant as this team could be.
The true villain team. The team that everybody wants to smack in the mouth every time they play it. All right, all right. You are now in tune with the resistance. You are on with the real sports guys, RSG crew, Renegade Radio. The real guys talk real sports. All right, we hanging out at the intersection between life, politics, culture, and sports. And we're the corner boys. Gonna show you around the avenue, show you which way is up, which way is down, keep you on the straight and narrow. All right. Thank you for joining us. We're going to hold you down for the next 2 hours, 8:30 to 10:30, like we always do about this time. On the line with me, I got my man, Phil T. Sports, PhD. What's up, man? How you feeling?
Hey, man. I've been listening to a little John and Eastside Boys early tonight, so forgive me if I'm a little belligerent and difficult, okay? I'm also a little bitter, too, man, because I didn't get who I wanted, you know, in them late rounds of my fantasy draft, man. So, again, apologies ahead of time, man, if I'm a little belligerent and difficult tonight.
So the combination of some Lil Jon and getting left out in the cold in your fantasy draft got you on one tonight. So, hey.
Hey, man. Hey, that's the first time I've listened to that, man, Crunk Juice, in like 5 years. So, you know, I mean, it got me a little fired up, man. I was on the treadmill just punching, air punching, man, you know. So.
Somebody got the brakes beat off of them.
That's right.
Hey, I'm going to stay out your way. I appreciate the warning. I always appreciate that. So I'm going to stay out. I'm going to steer clear of those air punches. But I'm going to encourage the callers to get in. If you want to get on with the Real Sports Guys, we got a jam-packed show tonight, as usual. If you want to get on at any time, feel free to call in at 1-347-989-0844. Feel free to call in at any point. My man, D. Wills is going to be jumping in a little bit. But until then, we're going to jump right in and get it going. As we always do about this time, we're going to hit you off with the funky editorial.
Fellas, only one thing we need to say. Shall we say it, y'all? Melvin, right. Jimmy, Coleman, Ryan, set. Everybody want to get funky one more time.
All right. So, for this edition of the Funky Editorial, the Real Sports Guys, the RSG crew, is going to, we're going to put on our Negro Damas, our turbans real quick. Break out the crystal ball, all right? Get the tarot cards out, okay? We're gonna read some palms, and we're going to try and predict some different trends, some different things that are going to happen, some things that we've seen in the preseason, in the NFL. You know, as the season prepares to kick off on Thursday night, I don't know about y'all, but I'm geeked. I don't know about you, Filthy. I'm geeked. Extremely, extremely geeked with a capital G. All right, with a capital G, I'm geeked for the football season to get going. So we're going to get into that, just talk about some of the things we're really excited about, some of the things that we see happening. We're going to look at kind of the state of the running back position, how it's changed a little bit. This isn't the NFL that we grew up on. It's a different version of that, similar but slightly different. Let's talk about the new kickoff rules and how that's going to affect the game and whether or not that was a good decision. And then some other trends that we may see, and there's some lingering effects of the lockout. And, of course, we had a habitual line stepping moment this week. The habitual line stepper, not the adjective, the noun, Commissioner Goodell, did some line stepping this week, and we're going to get into that again. We're going to touch base on that.
Can you break down the line stepping? I mean, some of our listeners just may not have your take on the line
stepping. So the line stepping, all right? Line stepping is when, you all know, there are certain things socially that are just unacceptable, okay? There's certain things that you just are taught as a child. If you had a good Christian upbringing, all right, there's certain things that you were just taught not to do to your fellow man, to your fellow human being, all right? They're just unethical, they're unjust, and unbecoming, all right? And so line steppers are people who violate these social mores, these social norms. They violate them. They step over those lines into territory of Neanderthal, all right, basically, all right? They're displaying very primitive behavior at that particular moment. As Charles Barkley said, you know, anything less would be uncivilized. These are the people he's talking about, all right? They don't use deodorant, no kind of thing. So that's what a line stepper is. Now, Commissioner Roger Goodell of the NFL is a habitual line stepper, constantly crossing these social lines. And the example I'm talking about, and we'll go ahead and get into this first because it's real quick. We can jump into this and jump out of it. But he went on Mike and Mike this morning, and as he's on Mike and Mike, he was talking about suspending Jim Trestle, okay, which is just, in my opinion. Don't get me wrong. He should suspend Jim Trestle, okay, because if you're going to suspend Terrell Pryor, you got to suspend Jim Trestle. But in the same sense that I agree that Jim Trestle needs to be disciplined, it's like you punch your mom in the face, so you got to punch grandma in the face. It's wrong. Neither one of these people need to be suspended. One, Jim Trestle doesn't really work for anybody in the NFL right now. So how are you going to suspend a man that don't work for you? So the Colts are not – basically, Jim Trestle is a consultant for replay review for the Colts is what he's going to be. And so the Colts themselves suspended him for the first 7 games because they figured Goodell was going to do it anyway. But again, it's like, two wrongs don't make a right. He shouldn't have suspended Terrell Pryor for something that happened in college, all right? He shouldn't have suspended Terrell Pryor for something that happened in college. You can't discipline a coach for something he did when he was not in your league. Like, again, and it wasn't like he violated some sort of social norm. He violated the rules of a different organization, which is why he was punished by being fired or forced to resign or however you want to view it. He already had a punishment. He doesn't need Roger Goodell to weigh in on what he did. He doesn't need you to weigh in. You know what I mean? Like, neither one of these people need Goodell to weigh in on the circumstances or late judgment in respect.
What did he say on Mike and Mike?
What Goodell said on Mike and Mike was that he was going to suspend Jim Trestle. He said it. If the Colts hadn't have done it, he was going to do it. And I was drinking the cranberry grape ocean spray in my car this morning. I about spit it all over my dashboard, man. He was unequivocally going to suspend Jim Trestle. And again, it's one of those things, two wrongs don't make a right. What they do is they make you look stupid consistently, okay? That's all you can say about Roger Goodell is that he is consistently stupid.
Wow.
Hey, I don't know how you feel about it, but I just think it's asinine to think that you can go about this. Again, both of these people have been punished, have suffered consequences for their actions. They don't need Roger Goodell to then jump in and also levy a punishment as well when they're not a part of his organization, for real. So that's my take on the habitual line stepper, the habitual line stepper. I'm gonna get back into what we was talking about. I'm gonna keep it focused, get back on track. All right. So, you know, looking at the NFL today, and this came to me as I was just going through a fantasy draft. You know, a lot of people out there play fantasy football. It's a fun thing to do. It gets fans involved in the game. It helps raise the profile of teams and players that other people that, you know, a fan in the Midwest would not care about the San Diego Chargers unless they grew up there, and most of us haven't. It allows you to have some investment in teams that you may otherwise not really give a damn about. And, you know, it has helped the NFL push things like the NFL ticket, NFL Red Zone. All of these things are really, really driven, you know, a large part of it is driven by the interest in fantasy football, because I have no reason to want to watch a Jacksonville game other than the fact that I got, you know, MJD, Maurice Jones-Drew, on one of my fantasy teams. So I might want to get NFL tickets so I can tune in and catch some of a Jacksonville game, you know, to see how he's doing, to see if he's getting a touchdown. Or, you know, I might get the NFL Red Zone Network to see, you know, a team with one of my players gets in the red zone and check them out. So fantasy football kind of got me thinking about how the game has changed and evolved. I was in a draft, and I think four quarterbacks went in the first round of a fantasy football draft. Now, I've been playing fantasy football since about 04, so about 7 years I've been playing fantasy football. And when I first started playing, it was a running back dominant endeavor. You had to get a top running back in the first round, or you didn't stand a chance of winning. Now that's changed a little bit. At least the perception has. I don't know if that strategy still works, but you know, I was in a draft and you had Aaron Rodgers, you had Drew Brees, you had Vic, and you had Phillip Rivers all go in the first round of a fantasy football draft. In this particular draft, I wound up getting Roddy White with like the 23rd or 24th pick in the draft. I got Roddy White, and that's one of the top two receivers in the game. So the league has evolved and become more of a passing league, and that's reflective, I think, in how people view that selection process of fantasy football. They believe the quarterback is most important now. And with that, the state of the running back position has changed a whole lot. I want to toss this to my man Phil T and let him weigh in and give his perspective on how he's viewed the evolution of the running back position and where it is today.
Well, the way I look at it is, you know, I grew up in the 80s and 90s, man. And what was the big video game back then in football?
Tecmo Bowl.
And it was like each team had a staple running back. You know, they didn't have a whole lot of committees. I remember the first Tecmo Bowl. San Francisco, who do they have? Roger Craig. You know, the Raiders, who do they have? Bo Jackson, Marcus Allen. The Bears, Sweetness. You know, all these teams had staple backs. And nowadays, you'll be hard-pressed to pick more than a handful of staple backs in the league in terms of guys that were there, like that were the main guys a couple of years ago and will be the main guys a couple of years from now. It just seems to be a revolving door. And the way I look at it is, what if 15 to 20 years from now, that's what quarterbacks go to? That's what the quarterback position looks like. You know, right now, you know, you got a go-to quarterback. The philosophy is you need a quarterback. You need one guy. Why? For a lot of different reasons. For continuity, for, you know, harmony in your locker room. Like, you want to have that one guy, that Peyton Manning or that Drew Brees, whoever it is, you want to have that one guy that you anoint. Well, that's what it was like with running backs 15, 20 years ago. You had to have that workhorse. But what if 15 years from now we start doing quarterbacks by committee where you can have a Cam Newton or a Tim Tebow come in and do their thing and then have a pure passer that's also out on the field that can also play receiver? You know, you have these hybrid type of players. You know, you got Cordell thinking, you know, Cordell Stewart thinking like, man, you know, I was born 20 years too early, you know. But, you know, I just kind of think in that regard, man, because you've seen the evolution of the running back position where essentially teams are hedging their bets. You know, they're not just putting all their eggs in one running back basket per se. What if teams get hit to it and start thinking about the quarterback position like that as well? I mean, that would just change the landscape of the game.
I think you raised an interesting point, because you know the way the running back position is now, with you know the running back by committee, it has changed. And now teams, we're coming off a season where I think we had more 4,000 yard passes in the league last year than we'd ever seen in one season, and I think you're right on point. You know, eventually we may see a Tim Tebow, you know, have major value in the league because, again, I think what will happen is the quarterback is going to be the key ball handler because the running back position is being phased out. If you look at college programs, there are very few college teams that run a traditional I formation, two-back set where you have a running back getting the ball with a running start, reading, you know, hitting holes and running through, running between the tackles. Now you have a lot of these spread offenses where backs are, you know, oftentimes really small receivers. You know, so running backs now have more receiving skills. So as that trend continues, you will see quarterbacks looking for running quarterbacks to do some of that dirty work between a tackle and running, where a guy like Tim Tebow then has some value. So I think you're right on. I think eventually that may be where the position, where things go and where things evolve
to. Imagine if you had the opportunity to play Cam Newton in the same backfield as, say, a Matt Schaub. And you got him set up in a shotgun type of situation, and Cam's where the traditional halfback's at. I mean, as a defense, how do you prepare for that? Right now, when you bring in a wildcat package, the team can kind of eliminate certain aspects of the playbook in terms of the defense. They can just eliminate that the offense is not going to do certain things. Will they put a running back there, or they bring in a Brad Smith, or you know, a quarterback that's known to run the wildcat. You know, I mean, what if you have a Terrell Pryor who runs a 4-3, you know, that 6-5, can run in between the tackles, can run decent routes, and you put a pure passer back there with him. I mean, it just changes the whole aspect. You know, if you look at high school football, you're seeing that a lot. You know, you're seeing cats out there lining up behind the quarterback wearing number 23 and not wearing a single digit or a team number, you know. I mean, I think eventually the NFL might get to that point. And I know some people might be thinking, that would never, never happen. But, you know, who would have thunk 15, 20 years from now that you only had four or five staple running backs in the league?
Yeah, I mean, when you don't realize it until you really go through a fantasy draft and you're trying to find guys who aren't sharing time. So that's what you're looking for when you're drafting for fantasy. You're looking for those couple of situations where you have a guy who is going to get 25-plus carries a game. And those guys are few and far between. You know, I would say Adrian Peterson, Chris Johnson. I think Arian Foster's injury has pushed him out of that category. He may have been a guy you would consider there. Maybe Rashard Mendenhall, possibly a Michael Turner. But even then, with those guys who are kind of the only lead, who seem like they're the feature back, I think Atlanta's going to put the ball in the air more. with Big Ben back, you know, Pittsburgh still likes to grind the ball, but I could also see them putting the ball in the air more than usual. They have, under Mike Tomlin, passed the ball more than they traditionally had in the past under Cowher. So, you know, even in those situations where you have what seems to be a feature back, offenses are now geared more towards passing the ball. And I think something that's dictated that a little bit is the evolution of defense. More and more defenses have gone to the 3-4 alignment. And with the 3-4, one of the main ways to beat the 3-4 is to spread it out, because that creates lanes. That creates passing lanes. That creates running lanes. And now you can see where things are coming from as a quarterback, as an offense. Now you can see if you spread it out and you force them to have to defend a wider amount of space, now you can see where those blitzes are coming from. You can see who's dropping back, and you can kind of make sense of all the confusion, where if that happens in a very tight space, it's really hard to kind of make sense of everything that's going on, because all you see is people moving. When you spread it out, now you can see what's coming and where it's coming from, and you can adjust. And so I think that evolution of defense to the 3-4, where now, you know, teams are trying to figure out how to beat 3-4 defenses, now you're seeing teams kind of go more towards spread offenses, 4 wide receiver sets, 3 wide receiver sets, and passing the ball more. You see a lot. I mean, if you watch some of the Patriot games, you watch a Packer game, you watch a New Orleans Saint game, you're going to see Drew Brees, Aaron Rodgers, Brady in the shotgun. Probably, you know, 60 to 50% of the passing downs. At least half the passing downs, you're going to see them passing out of the shotgun. So they have time to see where things are coming from and adjust to make the proper reads. And, again, I agree. I think, you know, the next evolution is having two passers back there and one of them being able to pass and run. And I think that would really throw teams for a loop. I think somebody should give sports PhD an offensive coordinating job. You know, why don't the Panthers groom? Why don't they groom Clawson and Newton to play together? Maybe that's because they don't believe in Clawson.
Right.
But what I will say is, hey, Cam looks like he could play.
Yeah.
Cam looks like he's gonna be all right. You know, I was skeptical on the brother. You know, I said I was gonna hold my tongue and wait. Past judgment, there were some red flags for me, but he looked like he's gonna be all right, and I'm happy for him because he looked like he might make good, which is good for him and it's good for old JR and that organization out there. And I hope he get hella tatted up.
Right. You know what's interesting, man, is Steve Smith. I mean, he went late. You know, in one of my drafts, he went like, I don't know, 8th, 9th round. You know, and I think whoever picked him up, they're going to have a steal, because he may not give you production, you know, that 1,200-1,400 yards and 10 to 15 touchdowns like he used to, but I think he's going to be really productive, you know, especially if you're in a point per reception type of league, man. He might not get the deep throws, but, you know, Cam never looked really pretty. Never. You know, I mean, he's always been a real rugged type of quarterback, you know, and I think the key with him, if he stays healthy, if he can play his style and stay healthy. Now, a lot of people don't think that he can do that, which, you know, looking at the trend of quarterbacks in the NFL, I have to agree with that. But at the same time, if he can find a way to stay healthy, man, and still play his game, the Panthers might mess around and spoil some people's seasons, man, towards the end of the year. You know, they might mess around and win 6 or 7 or 8 games and really screw up some teams, you know, playoff hopes.
Yeah, I'm hoping. I'm hoping by the end of the season he is performing at a high level. I took him really late as my backup quarterback in one of my fantasy drafts. You know, this year I've tended to kind of lay back on the quarterbacks and get a quarterback later and not get caught up in the quarterback frenzy early and fill my other positions. And so because of that, you know, I was kind of looking for some sleeper options late, and I took Cam in one draft. So I'm hoping by the end of the season he is, you know, performing at a high level. at least a consistent level where he can win me some money. He can get that bread, you know. But you know, a lot of things are changing. The league has these new kickoff rules. Now, for those of you that aren't aware, the old way of kicking it off, they kicked the ball, what was it, from the 30, right? They kicked it from the 30-yard line. Now they're kicking it from the 35. And with the kick from the 35, they're doing this to decrease. You know, the NFL is very afraid of being taken to court in 10 years, 20 years, by all these players who suffered head trauma from participating in the NFL. They're very fearful of that. If you look at the moves that the league has made to the safety precautions that they tried to put in place, whether it's over-fining people or kind of drastic rule changes like the kickoff rule, which basically moving it up those 5 yards is basically, you know, almost taking the kickoff out of the game as a play. You know, at this point, it seems like kickers are just knocking it 5 yards deep in the end zone now. And those kicks aren't being run back. They're not going to be run back during the regular season. You know, some teams in the preseason have run them out of the end zone just to get a look at guys in a special team setting. But I don't think that's going to happen in a regular season. They're going to take the ball from the 20 and keep it moving. That's an exciting, it's a game-changing part of the competition that's going to be taken away. I get why they're doing it. The question I ask is that too much? Are they taking the whole safety thing too far? Hey, Phil, you there? I think I may have lost my man.
I'm here, man.
Okay.
I see how Belichick responded, as well as Lovie Smith, and I honestly don't think that it's going to be as big of an impact as some people are thinking in terms of taking away an aspect of the game. I think you will see it play a bigger role in domes, in places where, you know, the conditions don't have a big impact on the kicking game, you know, where most NFL kickers, man, you put them in the dome and you give them 5 extra yards, they're going to bang that thing deep in the end zone, if not kick it out. But if you're playing in Chicago in November or Green Bay, you know, instead of it going to the 10, it's going to go to the 5 now. So, unfortunately, I think that it'll neutralize some players like Devin Hester when he goes up to Minnesota or he goes up to Lions, to Detroit when the Lions are playing, you know. But I don't think it's going to have a significant change, you know, of the game in terms of the quality of the game and the excitement of the game. You know, I think for what the NFL is exchanging it for in terms of keeping guys more healthy, taking out the most physical part of the game, I like it. I like it. But, you know, I'm sure if D. Wills was on, he'd be like, man, NFL getting too soft. But, you know, he's strong.
Yeah, you know, I can see both sides of it. And we're going to let D. Wills go ahead and hop on in here and get his own analysis.
So, I would say the NFL is getting too soft. What's up? How you doing? Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. Holler at the people.
Okay. Hey, what's up, folks? Sorry for the late arrival, but, you know, real sports guys got real jobs. We rolling. So that's how it rolls tonight. So where y'all at on the conversation?
We right now we're talking about the kickoff new rules and Dino was just, you know, the PhD was just explaining how, you know, his take on the situation was, you know, the new rule may not have that much of an effect, and it also may take away a play that was causing a lot of injury for no reason. And he said that you probably would fall on the other side of that. and that you would go ahead and say, what you've always said, is that the NFL is becoming too soft.
Yeah,
so why don't you go
right.
ahead and give us your perspective on the whole the new kickoff rule and how that's going to affect the game and whether that's a positive thing or is it a negative?
Yeah, I'm putting words
like
in
this.
That's what I'm doing.
I think, but you're right on. It's, the NFL is kind of like the parent that tries to make it the house accident proof for a child that's learning to walk. And sometimes sometimes the kid needs just to bump into something, and that's when they learn that that's not the way to go. And so I think they're trying to overprotect, over put rules in to decrease the collisions, and you just can't do that. And so, you know, the answer to some of this is, you know, is around roster size, you know, changing some other aspects of the game to allow for people to have a little bit bigger rosters and to deal with injuries. But you can't try and create these ways that reduce high-impact collisions. You just can't do that. And I think they're going about it all the wrong way. They're not focusing on technique and all the other things that have gone to the wayside with college sports because coaches, frankly, in college just don't have enough time to help people with the development of technique. They don't have enough time with their athletes. You know, college is one of the only, and someone was talking about this the other day, is the only place that doesn't really have a preseason, aren't able to really scrimmage other folks. They just kind of jump in. And so the NFL is constantly trying to make up for things that colleges are not doing in order to help prepare these players better in the NFL. And so rather than building in your own system to compensate, like I always say that, you know, business community is done with diversity. College is doing a good job with preparing people for a global society. So what businesses did was like we have to create our own infrastructure to prepare these kids who aren't ready to be dropped in Beijing. In some ways, you have to do the same thing with NFL. NFL knows that their players are not coming out with the right technique kind of things, and so they need to do things either allow for a little bit more training in camps so coaches can spend more time with players to work on technique, which is another thing, or they need to build it out so they have better rosters. They can get bigger rosters, work on things so that you can adjust for folks who might get hurt in these collisions. But you can't legislate the contact out of it. And this is one more example of them doing that.
So, you know, are we going to see, we were talking about the game evolving and where the game is going. So does a player like Devin Hester become, are we going to see those kind of kick returner types become useless? Is it going to eventually move just, hey, spot the ball on the 20, let's go from there? Is that going to happen?
Well, think about it. Think about Deion Sanders was a great cornerback. But what got him in the Hall of Fame as well as his ability to return, right? And so think about the players that put the icing on the cake on their Hall of Fame career by their ability to return the football. Think about Gale Sayers and his ability to be a return person. Think about just historically the role of returning, whether it's a Devin Hester or someone else, especially early in their career, and how that was able to round out their career in terms of how you evaluate the type of player they are. So I think, you know, it's one of the most exciting plays in football, and they're limiting an opportunity for another exciting play. Yeah, there's collisions, but there's also some great returns, some historic returns that people have had, and you're taking away the opportunity for someone, I think, like a Devin Hester, like someone else that can really have an impact on the game.
And there you have it. All right, there you have it. Now, as we move forward into the season, you know, we all know that there's going to be some lingering effects from the lockout. These guys have had a lot of time off, a lot of time without, you know, intense training. You know, technique is going to be a little sloppy the first couple weeks for some teams. Not all teams, but for some teams. You know, some of those explosive players, hamstring injuries, Achilles injuries, you know, all those things I think are going to play a major role and how the early part of the season plays out. There may be some teams that get caught behind the eight ball a little bit. You know, the Colts are one of those teams that I think, you know, not being able to, Peyton Manning not being able to access the Colts medical staff the way he may have been under normal circumstances may play a major role in the Colts' early season success or lack thereof. What are some other situations out there where we may see, what are some other possible effects that the lockout is going to have on this early part of the season?
Well, I would say that, I think, you know, just the kind of the idea with hamstrings and just, you know, being a, because I think coaches are so conscious of keeping people healthy that guys haven't had a chance to go for goal and do a lot of things. And I think that's where you're going to see a lot of strains, a lot of hamstrings. I mean, just, you know, what we see from players that hold out is, you know, we saw with Revis last year that you just, there's no substitute for as much, you know, off-season workouts that these guys are doing. There's just no substitute of putting the pads on and hitting. And so I think, you know, we have to be careful in that. And coaches are going to have to really think about how heavy, you know, they're going to be pushing folks, particularly those skilled players. They're going to use depth a little bit more to allow for folks to get into the swing of the season. So those teams that have built depth, have some people who can step in, particularly those defensive backs, receivers, running backs, and those running backs especially. I mean, I think coaches are going to really watch it these first couple weeks how they're managing the workload of some of these players.
Yeah. I mean, injuries is what we always hear about. You know, and I think that's valid. I do. The other thing we're hearing about is continuity, where teams are going to be behind in terms of chemistry, and we're going to see a sloppier brand of football in terms of, you know, more penalties and just guys not performing as well in terms as a unit. I don't agree with that. And maybe it's that whole Little John and the East Side Boy I was listening to earlier. But before you got on, Devon, I said I might be a little belligerent and difficult tonight. I was listening to Little John and the East Side Boys earlier. So, you know, a little cross juice kind of got me hyped. But, you know, I think, you know, there's this thing called the Hawthorne effect. And the Hawthorne effect says, you know, when employees are being observed, they tend to perform at a higher level than they would if they didn't know that they were being observed. And I think that's going to apply to this football season. All these football players have been hearing is, well, they didn't get the mini camps, they didn't get these OTAs, they're going to be sloppy. And I don't think coaches really need to drill it into their heads because they already know that's going to be the expectation. And I think we're going to be pleasantly surprised where we might see teams and players, quote-unquote, be in midseason form a little bit quicker than normal in terms of seeing offenses clicking and not seeing defenses dominate from right away. Because, you know, a lot of times at the beginning of the season, you see defenses, you know, kind of dominating the offense, not really gelling right away. And I just think this season we're not going to see that as much. I think teams are going to be ready to hit the ground running. You know, I think guys over the course of the season, I mean, their livelihood was in question. And personally, I think, you know, we're going to see guys kind of respond and be a lot more hungrier, and I think it's going to turn out to a better product earlier in the season.
I agree with both of y'all. I think, you know, I think the level of play, I think for the top-level players, for the guys we're going to see the most on Sundays, the play is going to be spot on. I think where we're going to see some breakdowns is with those guys who – those maybe some of the second string, some of the third string guys who come in, you know, are going to be the guys who miss a tackle here, who are out of position, who blow a coverage assignment there. But I think for the most part, I think from the top-tier guys are going to be the top-tier guys. But what I will throw out there on the table is Chris Johnson is gonna pop a hamstring within the first 4 weeks. I'm putting money. I put a dub on that. I I would put a dub on that the brother will pop a hamstring. You can't be that explosive and sit out that long and think you're just gonna hop right in and not have no problems. I mean, Revis, you saw Revis, you know, Randy put a move on him, and Revis tried to keep up and pop his hamstring trying to keep up with Randy. It's gonna get him. So I think those injuries are gonna, you know, are gonna strike some of those guys who spent too much time away from the game. But I think we're gonna see what we usually see. And I agree. I think in cases like Green Bay, New Orleans, those teams that thrive on precision, but then also have a lot of continuity coming back, I don't think they're gonna miss a beat.
Yeah, I agree with you with the Chris Johnson, and part of, you know, for them, I think they just have to can't. The business side is the business side, and the game side has got to be the game side. So, you know, they got to be able to split carries and be very easy on trying to bring him back in to the fold. But yeah, I think, you know, really looking at a lot of those the running backs, a lot of these skill positions, and I think I agree with the continuity. Just with the depth too, you know, some of these younger guys picking up, you know, having the ability to use some of the free agents and some of the rookies who haven't really had those opportunities throughout the spring and the summer with those OTAs to actually learn the system and picking up. So yeah, I think where the people are going to separate themselves are the people who have real good organizational systems. You know, those teams who just, they run like a machine. And those are the ones who are going to be ready for this. And those teams, those organizations that are still trying to put those systems together because they might have new people in new places are the ones who are going to struggle those first couple of weeks.
So when you say run like a machine, you're talking about the Colts?
I mean, but even like the Colts, I mean, even without a Peyton Manning.
The Colts are a one-man machine. They don't run the same.
Yeah.
They're a one-part machine. It's like a Dyson ball. A Dyson ball vacuum. Something happened with that ball. That vacuum ain't working right no more.
That's right. But you're looking at organizations like the Eagles, like New England, like Steelers, you know, the Jets. You know, there's some organizations that have multiple parts, and they'll figure they got some stuff that's going. You know, even though San Diego's a slow start, they got some things that they've done. So there are some Green Bay, you know, there's some organizations out there that just are going to, they're going to have some hiccups and they're going to keep on moving.
Yeah. And I want to touch base on one more thing before we move on to five on the black-hand side. But there's been rumor and innuendo that Carson Palmer may show up sometime this week.
Hmm.
How is that going to affect things in Cincinnati? And is that a good look or not for Carson and for the organization, for everybody involved? Is that what does this mean?
I think it's more of a starting point. If he shows up, I mean, that probably gives Brown more incentive to be flexible, to potentially move him. Even if they have to audition him for a week or two, you know, at some point throughout the season to show that he can still do it, you know, to up, you know, the leverage that the Bengals would have in terms of what they get back in return. But I don't know, you know, I don't know if you play him in front of Dalton at this point. You know, I mean, you got a rookie quarterback that you've given the keys, you know, to the empire, and all of a sudden you're going to take away them keys and he didn't do anything wrong? I mean, I got a 16-year-old nephew that just got his driver's license. Man, you take away his license and he didn't do nothing wrong, oh, it's going to be some problems. It's going to be a serious problem. So, I think if he comes back, man, it even makes more of a mess unless they move him immediately. And right now, there would be some takers. I bet Indy would be interested if Peyton's going to be out for a while. You know, I think there's some other teams that would be interested.
Yeah. Go ahead, D.
You know, it's just, symptomatic of what's happening with the Bengals. I mean, I just read one of my colleagues, she's from Cincinnati, and she sent me this article I got to send to y'all that just kind of just lays out this whole situation with Carson and is like, it really shows just what is wrong and also what might be right with Cincinnati. But it's an organization, the best way to describe by one of the players, it's an organization caught in the 70s. And we often get on Al Davis about not being caught in the 70s, but you don't hear, even though you hear criticisms of Cincinnati, you don't always hear that kind of criticism of Cincinnati. But Cincinnati's just, they caught in the 70s. They didn't have an indoor facility for the players. It just, there's so much wrong to the fact you just feel sorry for the fans. It's like get in your car and drive to Cleveland. You know, it's just, it feels like it's just bad. And you can, for a top player like Carson to say, I'm walking away from $11 million, it tells you everything you need to know. It almost feels like they need an intervention. You know, it's like Goodell's doing all this other stuff. You need to just go ahead and straight intervene in Cincinnati if you can. You know, it's one of those things. So I think having Carson come back, having said all that, for those of us who play sports and we've all had our struggles, I've had my struggles sometimes in sports, you know, everybody's leaving. It's not good for the current players. You got to go with what you got. And I'm not sure if it's okay for him to come back. Because right now you're at the dawn of a new season. You got a young quarterback who appears to be catching on. He's a pretty smart, bright kid. You've obviously signaled to folks that you're going to feature. You got rid of Ocho. You got rid of a lot of veterans. You didn't ask T.O. to come back. You got Grisham there. You built around a lot of youth. You need to just keep on going. If you're going to do one thing, be consistent and go with your youth movement. If Carson wanted to just sit out, he can sit out. I mean, I think you almost take it like that. If you want to be, if this is the way we're going to roll, it's kind of like Puffy said when he's talking about them going to Cheesecake in Brooklyn. And they was complaining about going to get the Cheesecake in Brooklyn. You remember that? And they stand out front. And he said, if you're going to step, then step. And I think for Cincinnati, if you're going to be hard-headed, if you're going to be crazy, then just step in. Step this way and just leave Carson on the curb. Don't let it lock him out. You know, if you're going to be crazy, just be all the way crazy, not halfway crazy.
In all the way crazy news, Jacksonville released David Garrard today.
Wow.
After he went to the Chamber of Commerce luncheon, they say he came back and let him know that he was fired. I heard that stuff on the way home. I'm like, that's ruthless. And people wonder why people like Chris Johnson hold out. When you could be featured at a Chamber of Commerce lunch or dinner or whatever, and come back and find that you don't have a job.
Yeah.
If they wonder why Chris Johnson holding out, forget that. Jacksonville, y'all crazy too.
Yeah, man, you gotta get that money while you can. It is what it is. You know, it's you gotta maximize your earning power in a serious way if you're gonna play in the NFL. That's all I can say about that. That's just what you have to do.
That's it.
Be that as it may, we're going to slide in the five on the black-hand side real quick. So let's get that
five,
going.
Five, on the black-hand side.
Yes, sir. So we're going to jump right in. Phil T gave me his earlier. I sent mine. So we'll go first, and we'll give D a chance to weigh in after we go. So the first in the five on the black-hand side is give me your top six playoff teams from each conference. So six playoff teams from each conference. I have Sports PhD go first.
All right, I'll list my teams, and then I'll just kind of speak out on the eye-poppers here. So as far as my divisional winners, I've got Atlanta, St. Louis, Philadelphia, and yes, the Detroit Lions. For the wild cards, I have the Cowboys and the Packers. So I'll speak about the Lions because
The text messages are already coming in. The line is what?
I saw that. I was like, what?
I'll just speak to that, okay? So most pundits, most experts in the field are saying that the Lions are a year or two away from being a contender. I'm going against conventional wisdom. And, again, maybe it's the Eastside Boys and Lil Jon that got me going. I don't know, okay?
Belligerent and difficult.
That's right. That's right. Belligerent and difficult. I tell you what, I'm going against conventional wisdom. Why do they have to be a year or two away when they have the players right now? Some people say experience. They need more experience. They need more time to play together. I'm not overly impressed with anybody else in that division, and that includes the Packers. I think the Packers are a playoff team, but I don't see them, you know, running away with it with a 14-2 or 13-3 type of record. You know, I see the Lions as a 10 or 11 win team, and I also see the Packers as a 10 or 11 win team. So to me, it's kind of a toss up for that division. I see Chicago taking a step back, and Minnesota, I think they are the true wild card because we don't really know what to expect from them. I mean, this is a team a year ago we were talking about potentially being in the Super Bowl. In the AFC, my divisional winners, I've got the Texans, the Jets, the Steelers, and, yes, Denver. And the wild card, I've got the Ravens and the Colts. I like Denver, man. I think Kyle Orton is very underrated. I think it's a very weak division. I think this is the year Norv Turner gets fired. This is the year where San Diego starts out slow, and they don't pick it up like they have in the past. And honestly, I think I see this division being like the NFC West last year, where you can see a team win 8 or 9 games, possibly 7, and still walk away and make the playoffs. So I'm not overly impressed with Denver, but based on the other teams available, I think they're the strongest. I think Charlie Weiss leaving Kansas City is going to hurt them, so they take a step back. So those are my teams.
Okay. Now, my list was slightly different, and I'll get into that. I had Atlanta, Green Bay, the Eagles, and the St. Louis Rams as division winners. Then I had the Saints and the Giants as wild cards. Now, I agree. I'm high on the Lions as well. I think they can go 10-6 this year with, you know, I put money. I'd be willing to put a dub on that, that they could pull out 10 games this year and win 10. I think where Phil and I differ is on I do think the Packers are a 14-2 team. And that could be my Wisconsin bias because I hear about the Packers all the time. I'm really familiar with their roster. I know the depth that they got at, you know, a lot of positions. The thing about the Packers is they're really damn talented. And they're still the second youngest team in the league, which is amazing because, you know, usually Super Bowls are won by veteran teams. They aren't won by teams that are this young. And with the Packers, they won a Super Bowl last year with their starting running back out, their starting tight end who may be their best receiving option, who may be one of the best tight ends in the game out. You know, their starting middle linebacker was gone last year. They just had so many injuries. So it's like they got a bunch of free agents without going out and getting any free agents. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see what they do. I do think that they could win 13 games. I think they can win at least 13 games in Green Bay. I also like Atlanta a lot. I think Atlanta's, like I said, this is the year. Either Matt Ryan turns the corner or he doesn't. I said it last week on the show. If Matt Ryan can't get this team to 12 wins or above, with the weapons that he has around him, you know, Julio Jones looks like the dude, and he's already got a dude in Roddy White. They got a nice running game. They have so many weapons that people forget that they still have one of the all-time great tight ends in Tony Gonzalez on the roster. So, you know, he's like the fifth weapon. So I really, really like Atlanta. And then my sleeper team is kind of the Giants. I expect the Giants to make a lot of noise. The Giants are one of the mainstays, and I think one of the key pieces of their identity over the last 5 or 6 years, at least under Tom Coughlin, has been they've always had a strong front four, and I think that front four is just as strong as it has been. Pierre Paul, the rookie that they got, nice player. I think he's going to turn a lot of heads with his ability to rush the passer. They kept Matthias Kiwanuka, who I also like as a pass rusher. He's going to play linebacker. So they're going to be able to have three or four really good pass rushers on the field at any given time. I think that's going to allow them to cause a lot of problems for some of these passing teams that they're going to go against. And, you know, with Bradshaw, and people kind of forget about Brandon Jacobs, but he had a really good preseason. He looks like he's in very good shape. Between him and Bradshaw, I think they're going to have a very strong running game. And mark my words, Mario Manningham is going to be, by the end of the season, y'all going to know who Mario Manningham is. And Travis Beckham, Wisconsin boy, watch out. I'm telling you, I like the Giants as a wild card in the NFC East. Manningham and Beckham are going to be key pieces in that offense. And that defense, I think, is going to be solid. It's going to return back to the form that it had a couple of years ago. And it's going to look like, you know, what we expect the Giants defense to look like. So I expect the Giants to be the second team out of the NFC East and make a lot of noise in the playoffs. In the AFC, the division winners, I got the Patriots, the Steelers, the Chargers, and the Texans. This is the year for the Texans. This is the year that I think the Texans turn it around. So I'm going to get back into them in a second. I'm going to give you my wild cards real quick. My wild cards, I got the Ravens and the Jets. So, yes, no Colts in the playoffs. I think this is first time in a long time that Peyton Manning hasn't been in the playoffs. I just think the Colts are on real shaky ground right now with this whole Peyton neck thing. A neck ain't like a knee. It ain't like an ankle. It ain't like an elbow. It's a totally different situation, and I think they need to be very careful. And it's kind of one of those situations that they really didn't plan for. You know, when the Packers had Brett Favre, they always had a solid backup to the point that they could trade him and get something for him, whether it was Mark Brunell, Matt Hasselbeck, you know, Aaron Rodgers, so forth and so on. They always had solid backups behind them, solid guys who they were developing behind them. The Colts didn't really do that, and I think they're in a tough situation now because they haven't developed a quarterback behind Manning, you know, since he's been there. They haven't had guys who have come up behind Manning who teams have, you know, clamored to get. Even now, the Packers have Matt Flynn, who, you know, is generating some interest from other teams and will be a free agent at the end of the season, and he's probably going to make a nice chunk of change. You know, some teams are going to pay him a little bit to come in and compete for a starting job. The Colts have never really had that kind of a system where they develop quarterbacks behind Peyton Manning. So I think this is going to be a tough year for the Colts. I think they're going to hit some rough spots and some rough patches because I don't see Austin Collie and Pierre Garçon and, you know, Blair White and whoever else they throw out there, Jacob Tammy. I don't see them dudes performing with Kerry Collins at the helm. I just don't see it happening. You know, those guys were good because they got the spots where Peyton Manning could get them the ball. You know, there aren't very many spots on the field where Kerry Collins is going to be automatic because he's Kerry Collins. And he just got off the couch. So I like the Texans to win that division. I also like the Chargers, where me and Phil differ. I like the Chargers. He likes the Broncos. I disagree. I think this is the year that the Chargers put it together. They had a rash of injuries last year to the point where they were starting receivers that they're cutting this year. Okay, some of the receivers that started for them last year, when Phillip Rivers threw for, led the league in passing yards, they're cutting. They're cutting those dudes because they only had them because they was picking cats off the street and Rivers was making them look good. Rivers was making those cats look like world beaters. I do think they're going to be hurt losing Sproles, but I like Ryan Matthews. I said it before, you know, about a month or so back. I saw him play when he was in college. After watching him for two quarters, I knew that was a pro back. That was a professional. That was a first. You could see the way he ran. He was a first-round pick running back. And I still think he's that. I think it took him, I think, you know, he had some rough spots his rookie year, but I think he's figured it out. I think he's going to have a good season. And I think you're going to see a lot of a huge improvement in him, which is going to lead to a huge improvement in that team and their ability to control the pace of the game that I don't think they had last year. Tolbert is solid, but Tolbert's not a workhorse. Tolbert's not a game-changing back. He's just not. But having Vincent Jackson back, I think, you know, he may be one of the top five or six best receivers in the league, easy. Having Gates back and healthy. So I like the Chargers. You know, I like them a lot. And then I got the Ravens and the Jets cleaning it up. So that's my six. That's my 12 playoff teams. I'm going to let D. Wills weigh in.
Wow. We're probably pretty close here. So I did catch it because I saw the – so I was prepared, actually. And I guess we'll start the NFC. Yeah, because I saw it and I said, let me do this. And I don't know if I have my Kansas City Chiefs pick yet of that team that's on the rise yet, but we'll get that. But New Orleans, the Eagles, Green Bay, and St. Louis. And then wild card, Atlanta and Dallas. And one of the things, the tricky part about this was the New Orleans and Atlanta. So I think whichever team wins the division, I think the other one team is going to be the wild card. But I think people may be sleeping on New Orleans. I think New Orleans has some transition issues, particularly in their running game. I think if the running back position from just a physical running presence, they're much more physical this year than they were last year, which I think was going to make a difference for Breeze. And I think that's going to cut down also on his interceptions that he had. He had uncanny kind of turnovers last year that I don't think we're going to see this year. And I think their defense is going to be a little bit better this year. And I think in New Orleans and Atlanta had some battles. I just think that New Orleans will bounce back and get back to that run that got them to the Super Bowl. So I just think that it's against conventional wisdom because I think everybody's jumping on Atlanta's back. But there's something about Atlanta that we learned against Green Bay. I mean, not only losing, but getting beat down. It's kind of like a young boxer getting crushed against a veteran on their first title fight and whether or not they're going to be able to come back. Atlanta looks good, but I don't know if the scars of that beat down they took in Atlanta from Green Bay, if they've healed yet from that, because they got whatever they do this season not going to matter because they're in that mode, and this is the hardest mode for a team to be in where your regular season doesn't really matter. It's what you do in the playoffs. I think this is kind of early because of the way they got beat down last year. So they can do all these wonderful things in the playoffs, I mean in the regular season, but it's all going to be about the playoffs, about them because of the way that they exited last year. So, and I'm not sure how they're going to respond to that. I think they're going to be a playoff team. I'm just not sure if they're going to win the division. And then the Eagles and Green Bay, I know we're talking about the Lions. I agree. I think the Lions are on the come up, but I just think and Green Bay is just deep in talent. People understand that they had all those guys hurt. They're healthy this year. So not only are they one of the youngest teams, but now they're healthy with guys who were outstanding players who didn't play with the run in the Super Bowl. I just think that especially in this not having the kind of offseason and all the other stuff, this is a team that's poised to jump out the gate on people, and they might get 3 or 4 or 5 wins, you know, before anybody even catches up to them. So I think they are at least a 13-win team. And then I think out west, St. Louis, I think St. Louis's emphasis on defense and that focus that's coming with that emphasis on defense in that division that's still kind of learning is going to win them some games that I think is very important. They got a young quarterback. I'm not sure if he's going to have a sophomore slump or not, but if Jackson stays healthy and then they can run that football, I think that defense and the way they're building it, almost like that Giants team, that kind of, I think they're building that same kind of team, like the Giants of the Midwest in a sense, that in that division because there's still some folks coming on board. But I wouldn't be surprised if Arizona knocked them out. But I like the fact that they got that good focus on defense, and they probably had the best defense, you know, at least young defense in that division. In the AFC, I got Pittsburgh, then New England, Houston, in San Diego.
You got Pittsburgh?
Yeah.
You got Pittsburgh, Dean? You?
Yeah, I got Pittsburgh. That's a homer. I just think they, you know, I think they got a full, they didn't have all the turmoil with Ben. You know, they didn't have an offseason, but I think, again, that's a team that even with this short turnaround and coming in, they got a way that they do business. And with Ben coming in, kind of being settled, the additions of Cotri in that passing game, the offense and their defense, I just think on both sides of the ball, in the AFC, they, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they make their run back to the Super Bowl. It's going to be a test coming out the gate. But I think that they're poised to win. And I just think New England, you know, I think what they're doing up front, you know, as they start to – Belichick hasn't shown you everything, but it almost feels like this is the early kind of 2000 New England team, the way Belichick put this team together. It's like he went back to the future. And I've been, you know, I said this offline, even when we talk about the free agent stuff, you know, I feel really good about Belichick. I think one thing before I jump here, I think in the NFC, I also had Dallas. Then I said Atlanta and Dallas. And I think Dallas is poised because I think they just have been under the radar. And this is the first time in a long time they have not been out front and in the media, which I think is good for them. And I think they'll perform. So I didn't want to leave that. But back to the AFC, Houston, this is the year. If they don't do this, when we talk about who gets fired, we know who's getting fired. And then San Diego, I just think I agree that I think San Diego is not going to have – I think San Diego is going to have a fast start. I think this is going to be a good year for San Diego. I think it's going to be not the typical San Diego year. I think they're going to live up to their roster this year. I just have a feeling about that. And maybe it's because they didn't have the entire offseason to think about a lot of stuff.
No. Be real, D. Maybe it's because you just Phil Rivers with your first pick.
I took it based on this year. He was from former last year.
He
was performing last year. Philip Rivers has been putting up big time numbers, having me get a lot of respect for a while. But I think that his numbers and the outcomes for the team are going to start to match up in a way it didn't last year. He put up big time numbers last year. You know, he was a top quarterback last year, but they weren't winning the way his numbers didn't, the wins didn't reflect the way he was playing. Then the wild cards with Baltimore and the Jets. I just think Baltimore is a solid team. I think they're going to be battling all year. I just think they got a good foundation. The running game, I think Flacco's going to step it up. Not enough, but I think Baltimore is just going to be in there. And I think the Jets are solid. I think they're going to make a jump. I think they can win about, you know, 10 or 11 games this year. You know, for them, it's the same thing. It's not what they do to a regular season. It's how they play in the playoffs. It's going to be about Sanchez being able to make those key plays in the fourth quarter to get them over the top. That's going to be important. It's going to be how Plaxico comes along with them. But I think the Jets, just because I think they developed this personality from a just mentally tough kind of team, I think they're going to get over the top. And I just think that
–
Yeah.
Let me ask you this, D. If you had to select one quarterback to make the Pro Bowl between Sanchez and Flacco, who would you choose?
Ooh, that's a tough one. Because I'm not sold on Sanchez. I'm not sold
that's
on Flacco.
A tough one? I choose Flacco.
I don't think Flacco made one play last year against the Steelers. Really? I mean, think about it. Really? I mean, let's put it in perspective. He put together really one drive last year that you say was signature that Flacco won the game. I would say that Sanchez put together more drives than that last year that were signature drives than Flacco. Like, other than that drive against the Steelers, name another signature drive that you said Flacco won this for Baltimore.
I don't know. You know, I bring up that a couple of years ago when they beat the Patriots, but then I looked at it and the guy was like 4 for 19 for the game.
But you know what? If I had to choose a quarterback to take me 80 yards, I'm taking Flacco over Sanchez. If right this moment, if I had to pick a quarterback, I had, you know.
But Sanchez has actually done it more times than Flacco. Sanchez has actually done it. He did it last year.
Just be lucky to accumulate 80 yards in a game. Period.
But when you look at the plays, let's look at the playoff game against New England. He made some big time throws and plays and clutch plays down the stretch in a way that I haven't seen Flacco really do. Now I'm not saying his
total he may have. But what I'm saying is, if I'm right today, if I got to take a quarterback,
I don't trust Flacco.
I'm taking Flacco.
I don't trust Flacco.
I don't trust Sanchez yet.
And think about it. Flacco's got a much more dominant running game. His defense is probably comparable. But, I mean, I got one memory of Flacco is that catch that he threw up there. He threw it up like the NC State last second shot in the championship. It looked like a shot, but it was really alley-oop kind of thing. Fake at the end. You didn't know what it was. That was the kind of play it was. And I don't see Flacco as a guy that makes signature plays. I've seen Sanchez, he's been up and down, but he's made big throws.
All right, we got Ray on the line. I want Ray to jump in real quick on this. Ray, you there?
Ray. I'm here.
Hey, you hear us talking, man. So, Phil, see throughout the question. I want you to weigh in. I want you to add your wisdom into this situation right now, Ray. Phil, see through it out there. Who would you rather have right now, Flacco or Sanchez? Who are you taking, Flacco or Sanchez?
A Super Bowl run? Is that the question?
What was the question, Phil? You go ahead and phrase it. It was his question. I'm going to let him go ahead and do it.
Yeah, the question was, who's more likely to make the Pro Bowl this year, Flacco or Sanchez?
To be likely, I think that it would be Sanchez because he has the tools around him to do it. Flacco hasn't really accepted all the tools that he has around him yet. He didn't get enough out of Bolden last year. I didn't think. So I think Sanchez, has the tools and can get it done.
To be honest with you,
I don't really like either one of them.
I would say that.
To make the playoffs and to maybe win a game or two, I like that. But to mention them as heading to the Pro Bowl, I'd let them sit there, but I ain't putting them in. I got other guys I could do that with.
I see both these teams as very comparable. The Jets and the Ravens. And I think the key difference, because I think they both have strong running games, they both have strong defenses. I think the biggest difference is their quarterback. And I think whoever steps up the most this year, who makes that move,
right?
In my opinion, that team's going to go further.
And I agree with you. And I think it's time for these two young quarterbacks to take it to that next step. And if they don't, then you, as a franchise, you're going to have to look at it and wonder how much more you can build around them to take that next step. I mean, they've given both of these young quarterbacks enough talent to make some noise. I mean, there's certainly a lot of other quarterbacks you can think of that haven't had the quality of receivers that these teams have gone out and gotten for them. So that speaks volumes. Are they ready to do that? Are they ready? Which one of them? And that's where I'm stumped because I don't like either one of them. I just don't see it happen.
All right. So I'm going to move it to number 2 on the 5 on the black hand. Hey, before I do that, hey, Ray, before you came on, you were listening to us. We were doing our six playoff teams from East Conference. You got any thoughts on that? Any teams that we didn't talk about that you want to throw in?
Not really. I wasn't as ready and prepared as you guys were. You know, so I was fortunate to listen to you and to Dee a lot. I didn't catch a lot of Phil's input, but you know, I love the way that Dee won't ever leave that Pittsburgh organization alone. You know, he always has a reason why Pittsburgh is going to be good, other than the fact that just Pittsburgh's a damn good football team. You know. I like the Green Bay Packers simply because they're a damn good football team.
That's right.
I know if I poke D, you know, he'd be bleeding black and yellow. So, you know, for him to try to exercise some kind of, you know, mojo, you know, Pittsburgh's just a fine football team. You know, and without the distractions, like you said with Ben this year, you know, they should be able to do a little bit more. So in the AFC, you know, I would probably pick them, although you can't sleep on Belichick. And what New England has done is gone out and got him some players. Now, whether they produce or not, you know, he's kind of like New England team looks kind of like an old Raiders team, where they're picking up some scraps and expecting Belichick to, you know, get him on the field and do some things. I heard rumors today that they're trying to talk Randy Moss into coming back. And if that happens, that New England team has just gotten real, real nasty in the offseason. They made the most moves and the most noise, and they're always a fine football team. You know, I like what Philadelphia did in the offseason. You know, they went out and they spent the money to put some things together. They have Vic under contract, and they got a new attitude. But you know, in the NFC, I still like the Green Bay Packers. I still like New Orleans. I think what happens up in Green Bay, and what hasn't happened in a long time, is you didn't see a lot of press with Green Bay Packers. Doing too many commercials or getting all caught up in their own hype. I think this off season, you know, with the strike, really kind of let them just quiet down and settle in as world champs, and have the opportunity to come back this year without a lot of press and a lot of, a lot of locker room jargon, you know, to hang up on.
All right. So, you know, you mentioned Vic and the Eagles. So with number two, we're gonna get into offensive MVP. Who do you got for your offensive MVP? Of course, ain't no games been played yet, and we don't know how guys are going to look, and, of course, all that's going to play out. But for the sake of going on record with something this early, we're going to do this anyway, and we're going to pick an offensive MVP, somebody that we're expecting to have, you know, the best season on this side of the ball. And all of these picks are going to be up on Facebook, listeners. If you want to call in and give us your picks, feel free to. 1-347-989-0844. Jump in the conversation if you want to. Offensive MVP. I'll take this one first. With this offensive MVP, I want to go one way. My mind is saying go one way, but my mojo is telling me go another way. I'm going to listen to my mojo because I always listen to my mojo. All right, I'm going with Vic. All right, I'm going with Vic. Now, no, he's not going to have the season that he had last year. But what I do think, I think he's going to have a better season moving the ball with his legs. He's still going to be okay as a passer. I think he's going to be solid as a passer. Last year, he was lights out as a passer for most of the year. I don't think he'll be lights out. I think he'll have some moments where he's lights out, but I think he's going to find a consistent medium range. Between old Vic and new Vic, I think he's going to find a consistent, solid level to play at. And I think what you're going to see is, you know, after taking a year worth of hits, he hadn't been hit in a while. He hadn't put moves on people in a while. His running wasn't what it was last year. So I think he's going to run the ball a little bit more this year. I think he may eclipse 1,000 yards running. And if he does that plus throws for 3,000, you know, 3,500 yards or something like that, I think, and the Eagles win like they're supposed to win, win like they have the talent to win, I think that's going that puts him in front running for offensive MVP. And also, I'm putting it on this show. From this day forward, I'm referring to Michael Vick as QB Eagles. From this day forward, I'm referring to the Tecmo Bowl reference. I'm calling the man QB Eagles.
Well said.
So I'm going on record with Michael Vick for my MVP pick. I'm going to throw it out there on the floor and die for it. Whoever want to get it, die for it. There you go. Who going to take that one?
I'll take the next. And I was torn. My 1B was Michael Vick, okay, for me.
QB Eagles.
Okay, QB Eagles. that was my 1B. My 1A, though, and again, I'm in the shockers tonight. I'm going to go Sam Bradford, the Rams.
You ain't lying.
You down there doing more than listening to Lil Jon. You drinking that green, that juice that he got.
You got a styrofoam cup out there.
Hey, okay, well, you know, last year I was talking about the Chiefs as well now, okay? I'm not always off base too far. But I like Sam Bradford, man. You know, I think Steven Jackson is going to have a big year. And because of that, I think Sam Bradford is going to get more looks and better favorable looks from the defense this year. I like Josh McDaniel. I love him as a coordinator, hated him as a head coach. But a lot of the things that he did in New England, I think he's going to be able to do with Bradford. Bradford's a highly accurate quarterback, man, and a lot of people don't think he has the tools around him in terms of receivers, but I think he does. You know, he doesn't have huge names, but this time next year we'll be talking about a couple of those receivers as being premium fantasy receivers. So that's my take on Bradford.
All right. Jump in.
We got Sam Bradford in the mix. So we got Mike Vick and Sam Bradford in the mix.
I'll jump in then.
Who got
I'll
it?
Say,
go ahead.
This is Devon. This is Deegus. I'll jump in. I'll say Aaron Rodgers. And I think that a lot of this is like he already going to open up with a showdown with Drew Brees right out the gate. And I just think that last year he was under just so much of that pressure of that post Brett Favre, and now he kind of like Steve Young got the monkey off his back. I think he's just going to play loose. He got a first Super Bowl under his belt. And he's got some healthy receivers. He's got Finley healthy. I just think he's going to clown. And he's going to be going up against some marquee defenses. I mean, he'll be facing Chicago. He'll be facing that, you know, that growing and getting tough Detroit defense. And so he'll have some matchups where he'll have to make some plays and shine. So I think Aaron Rodgers is going to be, I think he's going to be MVP, especially if they win, you know, 13 or more, you know, offensive MVP. If they win 13 games, I think a lot of that's going to happen with him.
Okay. Ray, you got a pick for us?
Well, I like what all of you said. I'll reserve my comments on Bradford for a little bit. But, I think that Michael Vick is just a sexy pick. And I think that you hit it right on the head. Even if he doesn't have, the success that he had last year, to that same extreme, he still is an exciting football player. He's going to, be the difference maker in a lot of games, and he's just exciting to watch because you can't set your game plan up to beat Philadelphia unless you set your game plan up to beat Michael Vick. And then Philadelphia has other weapons this year to go right after you. So their defense is stronger. He's going to look as good as he always has. I just don't think he's going to have to play as hard as he has in the past. But he's going to look remarkable. I mean, he reminds me of Jordan on a football field. So, I mean, you can't help but stop and watch. You might be in Best Buy looking for a toaster, and if the Eagles are playing, you're going to be sitting in front of a big screen until the commercial or something, because you just can't take your eyes off of it. Aaron Rodgers is going to, you know, be an MVP candidate just simply because I think the Packers are going to win enough football games that you have to watch him. You have to keep an eye on him. But my MVP, if I were going to, you know, come out of the block, and I think I'll get a letter with a big set of kiss lips on it from Devon, is Ben Roethlisberger. Because if Pittsburgh gets back, and if Pittsburgh gets into the championship again, they can win that damn thing. You know, they were a player or two away from winning the Super Bowl last year. You know, every time they turned the ball over, you know, Green Bay made them pay for it. You know, Green Bay didn't have good field position all the time. In fact, they got most of it from turnovers. If Ben didn't make those turnovers, if Pittsburgh didn't make those turnovers, Ben could have been, you know, an MVP of the Super Bowl last year. So when you just talk about, you know, who's taking their team and who's, you know, putting them in a position to be successful, I think if Ben Roethlisberger has his head cleared a little bit, he can end up as the MVP. But, you know, all of the picks, you know, that were mentioned are legitimate. I just, if you're going to come out of the blue with something, you know, I think that, you know, nobody really is going to be surprised if Pittsburgh wins, you know, 12 games, wins the Super Bowl, and they tag it all on Big Ben.
The postcard is in the mail, Ray.
a big set of kiss lips on it too.
Yeah, it's gonna be black and yellow. The only reason I didn't pick Ben is because sometimes he just wins, but his numbers aren't always sexy. And sometimes, you know, with the MVP, you know, people like to look at the sexy numbers, but you know, Ben just makes that fourth quarter play. So that was the only reason I didn't put Ben up there as offensive kind of player of the year, because a lot of times they attach it to, you know, crazy statistics like Vic might have, or Rodgers, or, you know, some of these other players, or Chris Johnson, you know, 2,000 yards rushing. You know, people get caught up in the numbers a lot of times.
I think, you know, one of the things I will say about this year and Vic is that, you know, he's going to get hit a couple of times. Last year he was so well disciplined in staying with Andy Reid's, you know, concept of what a quarterback should do and how they should distribute the ball and just, you know, try to be a pocket passer and whatnot. And it helped him mature into that passer that everybody always said that he wasn't. And he showed you last year that he always was that passer. With Atlanta, he had to get out and run a little bit. I think this year, just to win ball games, you know, and I've talked about this and other players, you know, there's just something about Michael Vick that you can't coach, and it's that desire to win. And you know, he as much as said this year, you know, that last pass that he threw last year that got picked, you know, he should have took that ball down and ran. He knows it. He knows he should have done it. And Andy Reid would say, oh, no, you stayed in the pocket. You did what you're supposed to do. And I'm telling you, if that situation arises this year and they need, you know, 10 or 15 yards, he's the one quarterback, he's the one player in the league that just doesn't give a damn. I can do this myself if I have to. That's his attitude. You know, I call it that Danny Ainge attitude. You can't beat people like that. You just can't beat them. You know, when he got out of his game last year and it cost him, you know, a chance to go to the Super Bowl, he won't do that again. He'll look right at Andy Reid and go to hell with you, you know, until you suit up, you know, until you suit up, I got this in here, you know. You call the plays, and if it breaks down, I'm gone. I'm sorry. And then when it comes down to those last few minutes and we got to drive 90 yards, I might just drive 92 to show you this is what we should have been doing all along.
So with that said, I'm going to make an executive decision real quick. I'm going to cut the five short at two because I think we covered a lot of ground. And I'm going to get into our pick six. With the pick six, a new segment, we're going to get into talking about some games in this upcoming week because we finally got some games to talk about. You know, not practice. We really talking about the game, all right? So we're going to be talking about the game. We got some games to get into real quick. We got about a half hour left, so I want to spend the bulk of that getting into these games, all right? So we got six games, three pro, three college. We're going to get into these. First game, New Orleans-Green Bay, Thursday night, big stage, opening the season, two high-powered offenses, two really aggressive turnover-causing defenses, the two last Super Bowl champions, New Orleans in 09, Green Bay in, or New Orleans in 10, Green Bay in 11. Both teams, when they won a Super Bowl, their defenses were extremely opportunistic. That's something that you can't coach. That's something that you can't game plan for. It kind of just happens, and you got to be in the spot to take advantage of it. I think that's one of the key things to winning Super Bowls. You got to have that mojo going where your defense is causing turnovers. Both of these teams are looking to get back to that level. With New Orleans, you know, no Reggie Bush, but they. All right, this year with the pick six, oh, I'm keeping track, and we keeping records. All right, we keeping records, okay? So pick wisely, my brethren, pick wisely, all right? So who wants to take this one on first? Give your pick, give why you're going with, who you're going with, and we're going to keep it rolling from there. So who's going first, New Orleans at Green Bay?
I'll jump in. I'm going New Orleans. I'm going to New Orleans, and the reason why is, I think New Orleans was a much better team than people gave them credit for last year. And personally, I think the versatility and the dynamic back that they wanted Reggie Bush to be, I think Sproles will actually be it. So I'm going to go with New Orleans in a close one. I mean, a very close one, down to the last possession.
In the same way Chris Humphreys is everything to Kim Kardashian that Reggie never was, right?
That's why I think Reggie's going to have a big year.
Devine, you take this one. Who you got? Green Bay at or New Orleans at Green Bay. Who you taking?
You know I like New Orleans to win their division, but this is where they're going to stumble out. It's just hard to win at Lambeau Field. And Green Bay defense is going to be up and rolling early on. They're going to be coming from all kinds of angles. And I think that's where they're going to give them problems defensively. And I just think, you know, Aaron Rodgers is going to, you know, this is going to be a show for him. So I think it's going to be a shootout, but I think it's Lambeau. It's a tough place to win. And I'm not sure New Orleans is going to be committed to the kind of running game they need to be committed to in this game, as I think they're going to be as they progress through the season. Because to win this game, they're going to have to really be physical and run the football in a way that they haven't. And I think they will get there, but I just don't think they'll do it in this game. I think Green Bay is going to. It's just tough to win at Lambeau. That's it.
All right, Ray.
Well, I think Green Bay is going to win this football game.
Okay.
But I don't think you mentioned earlier, you know, with these two defenses and as opportunistic as they are, I don't think that it's going to be the opportunistic defense this week that's going to win it. It's the team that stays within their game plan. Because along with those, you know, fighting for those turnovers, you're taking risks and chances. And I think that the team that realizes that both of these offenses are just not, you just do not take those chances with these two offenses. I think New Orleans is going to have to be a bit more aggressive because they are playing in Green Bay. And if they get too aggressive, I think Rodgers will pick them apart and then exploit, you know, some of the weaknesses that they have. As tough as Green Bay's defense is, you know, last year they relied a lot on turnovers, and they were able to get it. I do like the angles that they're going to come in. at, and I do like the aggressiveness that they play. But if they get too hung up on themselves, you know, Drew Brees is going to chew them up. So I think that it's going to come down to staying home, staying with your game plan. Don't get caught up in the hype. This is the first game of the season, and it isn't time to show everything out. Just get out there and play. Stay with the game plan. But Green Bay at home, they're just hard to beat.
Okay. So in this one, I'm leaning the other way a little bit in a close game. I'm going New Orleans, actually. And the reason I'm going to New Orleans is because I think they're really, really going to put a lot of pressure on Aaron Rodgers. Greg Williams is all about hitting quarterbacks. And I don't think that's going to bother Rodgers so much as I think it's going to put him in tough situations. You know, he's known for holding the ball. And I think New Orleans may have that edge in causing a few more turnovers. Because I think this game is going to come down to the points are going to be put up. And I think I agree with what you're saying, Ray, that the defense that doesn't give these teams windows is going to be the most successful. But I think what it's going to come down to is also the offense who flinches first on offense. Because I think both of these teams are going to put up points. I think the defense is just going to be out there, you know, trying to slow somebody down. And I think it's the offense that I don't think it's so much going to be the defense that causes a turnover, but I think it's going to be the offense that makes a mistake more so than the defense causing them to make a mistake. I think it's going to be the offense that makes a mistake, whether it's a lack of concentration, people being out of position, or just a bad ball that comes out wrong. And I think, you know, New Orleans, their tendency to really want to get after the quarterback, I think is going to be a key in allowing them to do that, because I think they're really going to start. You know, they got Sean Rodgers up front, and I think they got a Brave Franklin from San Francisco. Both of them are huge run stuffers. I think that's really going to help them control Green Bay's run game, because Green Bay likes to run in spots. If they can run in spots, you're in trouble. So I think if they can control, you know, and limit Green Bay's opportunity to pick up those short yardage, pick up first downs in short yardage situations and really force Rodgers to throw, they can really let loose, and Greg Williams can really do his blitzing. But again, they're going to give up some points. The Packers are going to give up some points. It's going to be the team that makes that. It's going to be one or two mistakes that are going to turn this game. And I think, you know, if there's a shaky part of Green Bay's offense, it's the offensive line. And they're still trying to figure some things out with that offensive line. So I think that's a point where you can attack them. I don't see a whole lot of weaknesses in New Orleans' offense right now. The offensive line has been together for a bit. They're really solid up front. You know, they got Ingram. They got Thomas. They got Ivory. They got Sproles in the backfield. They got Henderson, Colston, Moore, and Meacham at receiver, plus Jimmy Graham at tight end. So New Orleans' offense is intact, and that's a solid unit. So I think that's why I'm going with New Orleans. You know, it could be a 44-42 game, you know, seriously. This is going to be a fun game to watch, and I'm glad it's the first game of the season. I'm looking forward to it. Our second game, Pittsburgh at Baltimore.
First. Oh, did Phil make a pick? Did you make a pick on the New Orleans game?
Phil picked New Orleans.
Oh, he picked New Orleans early. Okay.
He picked New Orleans. You and Ray went down with Green Bay. I'm taking New Orleans.
Okay.
Pittsburgh at Baltimore. I'm going to throw this one to Ray first.
Well, again, I think that this is how Pittsburgh is going to start their season. I think this is how they're going to establish themselves, you know, going into Baltimore and playing sound football. You know, I remember last year when we were talking about Pittsburgh is at a certain place, you know, by the time Ben gets back, you know, they're going to make the playoffs. And I think this is one of those games where, you know, Ben is going to shine. I mean, that's what you put the big guy out there for. I think it's going to be a tough game. But I think that Pittsburgh hasn't Pittsburgh is Pittsburgh. They're going into Baltimore winning that ball game.
All right. So I got Ray down for Pittsburgh.
Devon, who you taking?
Hide the women and children. This is gonna be this is gonna be rated R. But this game always comes down to last second quarterback play. And when it's really come down in between Flacco and Ben, Ben has done his thing. Flacco did his thing last year, but he did it against a backup. And so I see Pittsburgh, what Ray said, I think this is where they're going to establish it. And one thing about Baltimore, and I said this early on, the only thing I don't like about Baltimore is I don't feel like they got that young target on defense. They always used to add a young cat on the defense. I just don't feel like – I feel like they are – I don't know when age is going to show up on that defense. And my feeling is, and I don't know why, I feel like this year they might take a slip on defense that they haven't taken in a while. Not to mean that they won't be, you know, in the top. I just – that's something. They'll be good in this game, but I don't know where Baltimore is going defensively.
Okay. Okay, so you got Pittsburgh.
Yeah, Pittsburgh.
Big surprise. Phil T, who you taking?
I'm taking the Lions, man, by 20. I don't know if you heard me earlier, Ray, but I'm taking the Lions to win the division. But I digress. I'm taking
That's
Pittsburgh.
That's why you think Flacco.
Pittsburgh, but say what?
I said that's why you think Flacco and Sanchez should be mentioned for the Pro Bowl. So. That's
all right.
That's
all right.
Okay.
Yeah. That's all right. I mean, we'll see. Time will show. Time will tell. I'm taking Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh by 10.
Pittsburgh.
Wow.
Yeah.
And he gave the points.
Okay. All right. Everybody's going to Pittsburgh.
Wait a second, though. I do got to tell Phil, one of my best fantasy football teams does have your man Stafford at quarterback. One of the teams that I feel real comfortable with has that young man as quarterback.
Hey, Stafford's going to do all right. Stafford's going to be all right. As long as he stay healthy. That's really the only worry I got about him. His shoulders are like Greg Oden's knees.
Come on, man. Don't say that, man.
I'm just saying, man.
Take it back.
Stafford's like Greg
Oden. Not Oden. Come on, man. Take it back.
I'll take you back.
I'm sorry, Marcus. Go ahead and make your pick.
Oh, I think I'm going to go with Pittsburgh as well in this one. I like Flacco, I think, more than you guys do. But I have a feeling that Pittsburgh is going to come out to prove a point. Again, this is going to be a blood fest. Pittsburgh is still, I think they should be still pissed off about the Super Bowl. Plus, they're playing Baltimore, which is going to make them even more pissed off. And somebody had the nerve to say that James Harrison may be losing a step today. So I think he's going to break somebody's face. So I'm going with Pittsburgh.
Hey, what's the over-under on fines? 100,000?
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, if that one got ugly, I wouldn't be surprised, man. If they didn't set a record. You know, and Goodell going to be finding people for dumb stuff.
Yeah. And then that
you
will
know,
be
Goodell
going to
get
Goodell
going. Right. You know Goodell going to be finding people for dumb stuff. You know, jersey violations and things of that ilk. All right, so the next game is the Dallas Cowboys at the New York Jets. And, you know, before we get into this one, I got to throw in a...
Can't wait.
gotta have Bart Scott jump join us for a moment with a little...
Can't wait.
You know, we can't wait. All right. So we got the Jets at... the Cowboys at the Jets. I'll take this one first. In this one, I'm actually at what I feel like is a surprise. I'm going with the Cowboys. I think... Like I said, I think Jason Garrett had one playbook for Wade Phillips,
And I think he's breaking out a different playbook now that he's in charge. I think Felix Jones is due for a big season. I think we're going to finally see him start to shine a little bit. Miles Austin, dummy Dez Bryant, if Dez Bryant can quit being stupid and just play football, because that's what he's great at. If that boy can just play football, plus they got Jason Witten. You know, Romo's Romo. He's going to put up numbers. You know, jury's still out till he wins a playoff game or multiple playoff games. Jury's still out. But we all know he's decent in the regular season. So I don't think, no matter how you feel about Romo, I don't really think you can argue his regular season performance. The proof is in the pudding. In the regular season, dude plays. And I feel like their defense, you know, I think their defense is going to ratchet it up a notch. And the Ryans usually do pretty well when they have talent. And Dallas had talent. That they have some talent on the defense. I think it needs to be given. I think their defense needed a mentality and an attitude to play with. And I'm hoping, you know, Rob Ryan gives them that. You know, if anything a Ryan boy has is attitude. So I'm kind of going. I think Dallas is going to take this one. So I'm going to go on record with Dallas. I still like the Jets this year. I still like them to win a lot of games. But I think, you know, they're relying on a lot of young guys early with Sean Green and Sanchez and Keller, for those guys to kind of step up and turn it around on offense to really make that offense match the level of defense. I don't know if they're going to be able to do it out the gate. So I'm going with Dallas. Devon, I'm gonna let you pick this up.
How about them Cowboys?
Everything you said, man. I think that the Ryan Thanksgiving ain't gonna be the same after this game. I think that, you know, I agree. I think the Jets are gonna have a good season. I just think they're gonna have a little slow start in this one. And I think this is where people are gonna realize that Dallas is for real this year. I just think that. Defensively, they're going to be much better on the road. And I just think Dallas offensively is probably a better offense right now. So I pick Dallas to win this one. It's going to be a close one. It's going to be a barn burner. But I think Dallas will pull it out.
Okay, so D's got Dallas. All right. Phil T.
Well, we didn't get a chance to get to it, but DeMarcus Ware was my choice for defensive MVP. You know, I think this guy is primed to get 15 or 20 sacks. I think the addition of Rob Ryan is really going to get the most out of this cat. But as Lee Corso would say, not so fast, my friend.
Okay.
I'm taking the Jets. J-E-T-S. I think Sanchez is for real this year. I've been very critical of him, kind of like the game changers have been critical on Dwight Howard. Okay, but I think Sanchez is ready, man, and because of that, I think the Jets get out to a quick start, and they also finish strong, anywhere from 10 to 11 wins, making the playoffs. So I take the Jets against the Dallas.
All right, so 15 going with the Jets. Ray, who you got?
Well, I'm going to take the Jets as well because I, unlike you and Devon, I don't believe in the damn Cowboys at all. So. You know, you made a good argument for every comment you made, except, you know, I can sit there and go, I don't think Felix Jones is all that good. And Romo ain't never done nothing for me. You know, I realize that their defense is going to be a little bit different, but it's got to be a lot different than they were last year. I don't believe in Dallas. You know, and I don't think anybody else does either. It's not like it's a comeback. It's just they didn't make a whole lot of moves in the offseason. They really didn't change who they were. You know, Tony Romo is the quarterback in Dallas because they just don't have anybody better than Tony Romo to play. And I'm just not sold. You know, I'm just not sold on Dallas. And I'm not going to make excuses for them or anything else. I just don't think they're a very good
football team. I like the Jets at home. I know you'll find it whenever I make picks, I generally pick, you know, the players that I play or the teams that are at home. I just think home team, you know, has that advantage. Unless you have a team that can come in like Pittsburgh or against the Ravens with an attitude. Dallas does not have that attitude. I don't believe in them. I didn't believe in them last year, and I couldn't make any excuses for them. I don't like them as a football team. I don't think they have as much talent as everybody, you know, wants them to believe they do. I do like Des Bryant. He's an athlete. And after that, you know, wasn't Kali the other Kardashian reject?
Austin was. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. She threw him back too.
To you. You know, if Cam don't like you, you know, ain't no reason to like you. You know,
that's a Green Bay fan having them flashbacks of Michael Irvin. That's that Green Bay Dallas hate. Y'all get on me about that Pittsburgh. That's that Green Bay. I can't support Dallas no matter what stuff.
All right. So now we're going to get into some college football. All right. So we got three college football games on tap that we're going to pick real quick. We got Alabama at Penn State, first game. We got Notre Dame at Michigan, and we got Utah at USC. So let's jump into this Alabama at Penn State. I'm going to go with D. Wills to kick this one off. Who you got in the game?
Oh, it's Bama. It's not even a question. You know, Paterno got run
Valley.
Over in the preseason in Happy Valley. Just too physical. You know, I'm a Big Ten guy. I had an SEC. But I just think, you know, they're still – I know they were working through some quarterback stuff. I just don't – Penn State, I just don't trust them. Kind of like, I guess, how Ray talked about Dallas. Penn State, you know, I just don't – you know, I just don't trust them. I just think Alabama's going to come in. The defense is hell of a – you got to have a great defense on the road. They got a new quarterback coming in, but I just think they're going to be physical, great running back. I just think that, you know, it's going to be a tight game, but I think Alabama going to pull away in the fourth quarter.
Okay. So you got Alabama. All right. Ray, who you taking? You going with Joe Pye or you going with Saban? Oh, we lost Ray. We lost Ray. He stepped off. We're going to keep this one rolling, though. All right, so D. Wills, who are you taking?
Oh, I already said Alabama, probably Phil T. You got Bama, Phil T?
Okay, yeah. Phil T, who you got?
Rolling with Bama by two touchdowns, period.
Bama by two. End of story. Wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right. And I'm also taking Alabama. You know, I think this is one of those games that when you look at it, it seems like a marquee game. But at the end of the day, Alabama is Alabama, and Penn State right now is Penn State. Penn State's a solid program. It's probably a bottom 15 out of the top 25 program. It's not a top 10 program. Alabama's a top 5 elite program right now. And the only way Penn State wins is if something magical happens. I mean, some real angels in the outfield, angels in the end zone type stuff happens. Somebody's looking down on Joe Pa smiling type stuff happens. Then I think it's a wrap, and Alabama's going to run all over. Alabama has a talent advantage. I think they have the coaching edge. They definitely got the swag edge. You know, they're going to come into this game, I think, definitely with a confidence edge over a Penn State team that's not ready for prime time yet. Notre Dame at Michigan. Phil T, who you taking?
Big Blue, baby. Big Blue. It looked good against Western Michigan this past weekend. It didn't look as good as I'd like for them to look, but I like them because they're playing at the Big House. I think Denard Robinson, he was somewhat contained on Saturday, so I think he's up for a big day. And the Irish, man, they just got too much going on. You know, they're not fully set on a quarterback quite yet. So for all those reasons, I'm going Big Blue. Hail to the victors.
All right. Devon, who are you taking?
Hail to the victors. Hail to the concrete heroes. This one, boy, it's been a classic. I grew up in Ann Arbor. You know, I've been to some big ones. I still remember Duerson jumping on somebody's back to block the field goal. It was one that I was watching the end zone. These are always good games, but I think Michigan, they beat them 4 out of the last 5 times. I agree with Phil. Notre Dame's got too much going on. Until Notre Dame really understands who they are, they come to terms. It's like they need to go to counseling. Like the entire nation of Irish need to go to counseling. We need the one big couch that stretches across the land that they can all lay on and let Dr. Phil talk to them. But until they start to realize who they are, they're going to have trouble here. I just think that, yeah, I think offensively Michigan was a great offensive team. I think they're going to be explosive. And I think they'll make defense adjustments. They'll be even better on defense this week. And it's, you know, it's a night game in the Big House. There's going to be a lot of energy. It's Michigan.
All right, I'm kind of going the other way. The reason I'm going the other way is because of everything you just said. Notre Dame, every year they come into a season with expectations, this happens. It's like a mental block or something. It's like they, every year they have expectations, they fall on their face. Notre Dame has to win this game. The future of that program is riding on this season and their ability to turn this around. Because otherwise, it's a wrap. Like, to me, this is it for Notre Dame. To me, this is make or break. Like, if they can't turn this season around, if they lose this game, to me, this season for them is sunk. Or starting out 0-2 in another year where they had high expectations, where they thought they were going to finish the year the top 10, top 5. You know, they had a schedule that was supposed to be favorable. If it don't happen this year, there's going to be irreparable damage done to the psyche of Notre Dame fans and to the image of Notre Dame nationally. If they can't figure this, they have to. I feel like this is a program changing game right here. If they don't win this game, there's two trajectories after this game. If they don't win this game, I think they're going to go into a bad place. They're already hitting the panic button. After one game, they're switching quarterbacks. The Notre Dame folks know how important this game is. You don't switch quarterbacks after one game against South Florida. And you Notre Dame, and you gonna bench your senior quarterback? So I think I'm picking Notre Dame not because I think they're the better team, but I think they have the most amount of motivation to win this game. Next game, Utah at USC. We got about 2 minutes left. Let's speed through this one. We'll wrap up the show. Utah at USC. I'll start out. This is Utah's first Pac-10 game. I'm going USC. I think USC is about to lay the wood to Utah and show them what the Pac-10 is really about.
You want me to go?
Taking USC as well. Taking USC on a close one. I think USC opens it up, and they're going to make everybody realize that they're a national contender this week.
Yeah, which all I can say is City of Compton. That's what y'all going to be. This is
so
all
go
about
SC
South
too.
Central, baby. It's SC. All
right. So we all going SC. Cool. Well, we got about 40 seconds left. You know, another great show, fellas. Tip your hats. Tip your hats to the crowd. Take a bow. You know, thanks to Ray for hopping on with us and carrying us through a couple segments, riding with us for a moment. Appreciate that. He's always welcome. And, you know, we'll see you same place, same time next week. 8:30 Tuesday night, RSG, Renegade Radio. We are the Resistance. Peace. Shout outs, fellas. Got 10 seconds. Get them in.
Get them Steeler hats. That's all it is.
All right, we off.
Good day.
Yeah, yeah, man.
Yeah, that was a good one. We definitely got to hit some of these freestyles. Mayweather and the Ortiz. We just got to talk about the Mayweathers. They are not.
Yeah, man. We may have to lead next week with Mayweather, man. We're gonna have to lead next week with Mayweather because.
Did you get my text message?
Yeah, man,
yeah,
these 24/7s is on fire, man.
They are on fire. And we got to talk about Oscar De La Hoya and all stuff. But also what Oscar said about Mayweather and why he thought he was talking to Ortiz. Why he thought he should have been.
Did you see Mayweather when he said, "Man, the boxing game is crazy right now"? You got Oscar dressing in drag. He doing all this while he running, man. It was killing me, man. He's just going in on cats while he's running miles. Like 5 in the morning, man.
He had the stack of money with 50 on the phone. Didn't think that the other stack to talk to his mother. That stuff was crazy. I know Daddy was hating on me. I said, boy, this boy is a straight up fool.
Man, they all crazy, man. They all ain't right.
It all ain't right. My goodness, the entire Mayweather clan. But yeah, we definitely got to get into that one deeper because there's a lot happening. Ortiz is for real. I mean, he's a different kind of fighter. Talk about that kid's upbringing. This is one of the best 24/7s in a while.
Yeah, it is.
We definitely want to talk about that player of the year.
We gotta hit that too. I wanted to make sure we got into the picks before we ran out of time. I looked at the clock and I saw we only had 30 minutes left. So I wanted to make sure.
Dumbest analyst.
The
you asked about dumbest analyst. I was. You know, the crop of analysts are pretty. I would have this really stressed because before you could always pick out a few. But we also got some good analysts. So who are you thinking is the dumbest analyst?
Man, I don't like Slaris.
I think he just
spouts the company line all the time, and I just get tired of it, man. I just get tired of his whole stick, man. I get tired of Slaris.
Yeah, I can see his angle. He has a moral foundation, kind of a moral.
Yeah,
plant a lot of what he says in a sense that he comes from a guy that, you know, worked hard in the locker room, sometimes probably looking around at cats who made a lot of money, didn't like receivers, he's a lineman who just, you know, he had to fight for a job every year, and he could tell underneath he didn't appreciate the fact that some of his cats got the free, he had to fight every year. Sometimes that comes out through his comments.
What bothers me about him is it don't come out consistently. That's my thing. Like he'll give certain guys a pass and he won't give a pass to other guys for whatever reason because he's cool with them or he doesn't want to, you know, badmouth a top tier player, but he'll go after, you know, other guys real hard. He'll go in real hard on other guys, but he'll give other guys a pass for the same thing. So, you know, playing through pain, that kind of stuff. He'll go in hard on somebody for not playing through an injury, but then give somebody else a pass for not playing through an injury. That gets me. If you're going to be that way, be consistent. You know what I'm saying? Just be consistent. So Slaris was a guy I was going to go in on.
And the one that just kind of throws me off a little bit is Hasselbeck. Because he comes off in a way that, you know, part of it, I don't know what it is. Part of it is just, you know, you are a scrub. So he comes off with some of the authority that he's talking about, particularly when he talks about some of the quarterbacks. He talked about Cam and some of the stuff. I just sometimes he just comes off in a way, he's able to leverage his brother and stuff like that. There's some things about him I don't like. I'm not going to say he's dumb, but just I think for the same reasons you talk about Slurs, there's obviously some people, he's not consistent sometimes with some of the stuff he does. But I would say overall, in a long time, this is the best group of analysts across networks that I've seen in a long time. Because I went through the list, I'm like, all these cats are pretty good. You know, before there used to be a core group of folks you would say that would say some stuff, some Chris Collinsworth type people and some other folks. You know, you just kind of build some pieces there. But you look across, I mean, networks have done a good job of hiring folks. So it'd be nice to talk about who you think might be the best. I'll put Jaws up there against anybody.
Yeah, I like Jaws. I can deal with Jaws. I'm always a big fan of Shannon Sharp. Shannon Sharp is a guy I can just sit down and listen to, let him go and listen to him for a while.
Shannon gives you the real guy's answer to the question. That's what I love about Shannon. His stuff is the realest. That crew. We might want to rank. It'd be interesting, to talk about the crews. Who's the best? Is it the NFL or is it ESPN? You know, crew here, or is it the Monday Night Football crew, or is it the NFL? You know, network crew. You know, just try to figure out who you is it the HBO? I mean, Showtime's crew. What's the best crew in terms of folks? Is it Football America? You know, the crews, they'd be interesting to kind of put our ranking of those different crews and what they provide.
Yeah, we can definitely get into that.
Yeah. So Phil T's quiet. Is he gone?
I don't know. You still there?
Oh, I'm here, man. I'm here. You know, that crunk juice is wearing off, so.
He's slowing down. He's coming down. Coming down.
Phil is usually a little more, I would say, conservative. But you went out there for this year.
Yeah, man. For Bradford, the Lions, the Broncos.
Yeah.
I mean, I got a gut feeling, man. I mean, you know, I caught on to the Chiefs too, man. I mean, it's the closest team to where I'm at right now, so I'm feeling it. I mean, 2 years ago, man, when I wanted to sit down and watch a game on Sunday, it was tough, you know, because all I had was the Chiefs were playing a 1 o'clock game, and then the Rams were playing a 4 o'clock game. I mean, it was depressing, man. But you know, this year I think it's gonna be a little bit better. I think it's gonna be a lot better.
I wasn't sure about Bradford being the offensive MVP because I think it's kind of like one of those awards where he could have that kind of year, but they might make him wait until next year. Kind of like the NBA All-Star. Like, guy has an All-Star year. He doesn't get voted in, but he might vote in next year. So he might have a great year, but because he's young, he might get overshadowed, even in his own conference, by the Phillip Rivers of the world and Straub or – you know, some other guys, and Ben Roethlisberger's, and you know, Peyton comes back and has a good year, or Brady, or some of the other type of players they have. So I think that's the only reason I didn't hit him very much. But I think I have, I'm all on the wrong division. But I'm thinking of the Vicks and Aaron Rodgers and all those people. I'm all in the wrong division. Matt Ryan. I was all in the wrong division. Matt Ryan's of the world, but. You know, I think a lot of those guys are, you know, it took a while to kind of come on board with them. But I think St. Louis they got a solid team. Like I said, they look like the early New York Giants teams. They're going to be physical with you. They're going to push you around. He's getting the defense the way he wanted. They're going to fly on the radar for a minute out there. But, I think it's getting late on me.
Yeah, me too. I'm gonna call it one, and you know, I'll check in with you fellas throughout the week with texts and stuff.
Okay. Well, we're going to have a big Thursday night game, so I know.
Oh, yeah.
We'll have to go back and forth. I might have to go to my pub around the corner. And,
yeah, for sure.
And watch that one. So, all right, gentlemen.
All right, man. Y'all have a good one. Peace.